This is the Pitch Fish and My Cricket Coach Show, number 59. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Fish and My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. We also have a chat with Alan Crouch, the Head of Performance at Wiltshire Cricket. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. Well, David, I've told you before, but I'm sure many of the listeners wouldn't have heard. I'll be going away at the end of this week, so I won't be on for the podcast for the rest of this year, so I know you're trying to hold back the tears, David, but it's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's going to be strange to be doing the show without you for a few weeks, but we'll somehow get by. We'll get in some extra tissues to dry our tears, and we'll do our best without you while you're away. Where are you going? Is it an undisclosed location so the paparazzi can't go after you, or can you tell us where you're going?
I wish I had paparazzi. We're going to Hong Kong and India to see the grandparents, and hopefully I can score myself a new bat up there. So,
right, okay.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, exactly.
So you didn't play last week because you had a bye, if I remember right. Is that right?
Yep, that's right, David. And some of the members of our team, or six players from our team, had to go umpire a lower divisions, a lower grades matches. So
yeah,
the players from our team went and umpired the B11 matches.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback from that was actually pretty scary because they said, if not equal, some of the teams were actually better than the teams in our comp, which is scary thinking about it because these teams were four grades lower than our team. And if the competition is sort of equal, then it's really level pegging at the moment. So we don't want to drop down, or we don't want to sort of lose really badly this season. I mean, we want to get into the top four so we don't get demoted. So there's a lot of there was a lot of talk today about that. But yeah, I got to kick back this week, David. I went to the Nets actually today, had a bowl, and I've been trialing a few things, David. I know I'm not going to have a game for the rest of the season, but I've been trying a longer run up.
Yeah.
Basically, the theory behind that is, at the moment, I'm just ambling up and letting my body do all the work. But I've had a look at Ian Pond's fast bowling course on Academy, and he says even though the run-up doesn't add much pace to you, it can add that little extra spark to your bowling.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm fitter halfway through the season, I can actually afford a longer run-up and not get as tired as I would at the start of the season. So that's something I've been trialing out.
Well, Andy Caddick says in his course, because he's got a course on Pitch Vision Academy as well, which I edited, and he says in his course that the run-up, it's a similar thing to what Ian Pont says about the run-up, really. But the way Andy Caddick puts it is that the run-up is important because you need to get that take. You need to get enough momentum getting to the crease. And the only way you can get momentum up to the crease is to have a good take-off. And the only way to have a good take-off is to have a decent run-up. As long as you're not ridiculous, like Shoaib Akhtar, you know, coming back, kicking off from the side screen.
Yeah. But it's all about transferring that into the game. So it's going to take a lot more practice, which I'm going to have to do either on my holidays or coming out of the holidays.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, actually. What's the plan for when you're away? Are you going to be playing anywhere, or do you think you have anywhere to practice?
Last time we went, I wasn't really keen on playing in India, but it is India, and I'm sure there'll be people playing cricket everywhere. Mm. They were saying there's a cricket academy not too far from where we're going to be staying. And that's actually breeding up a lot of the younger players in the area.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe I could give them a call, maybe go train with them. I mean, I don't want to go bat or anything. If I could just bowl at their batsmen, sort of to keep my fitness up, keep my flexibility up and everything. Or they even suggested that I could join up a gym in the local area, which shouldn't be too expensive for the 4 weeks I'm away. So maybe those two things combined, I could just continue what I'm doing now overseas.
Yeah, I suppose you could almost see it as a sort of a training period in itself, really. I mean, I know it's holidays, but if you want to keep doing it, and you want to sort of keep your hand in, and not, because it's a long time without playing, isn't it? And it's quite
exactly
quite easy to forget what's going on, isn't it? Then yeah, why not? I mean, I suppose a lot of people will be traveling around this time of year as well, what with it being the sort of, you know, the holiday period. So I suppose what you're doing, you know, other people can take a lesson from that and think to themselves, right, how can I fit things in? I mean, some people think, well, I'm on holiday, so therefore I'm not going to do anything, and I'm going to eat what I like, I'm going to drink what I like, and you know, blow it. I'll get back to the cricket when I come back from my holiday. And if you want to do that, all well and good. But if you do want to try and do something, there are things you can do. I mean, even if you don't have access to a gym, there's always body weight workouts, isn't there? So, you know, a few press ups, a few chin ups aren't going to do you any harm.
Yeah, David, from a personal point of view, I'm a bit skeptical about not doing any cricket work throughout this holiday period. I mean, if you followed my struggles throughout the first half of the season, you would have noticed it took me about 3 or 4 games just to get into my full groove, my full rhythm in terms of bowling. I don't want that to happen in the second half of the season, which is probably the crunch time of the season.
Yeah, and everybody's different. When you talk about having momentum and all that sort of thing, you know, in the top level, everybody's a bit different. I mean, someone like, say, Steve Harmison, it used to take him probably 5 or 6 games before he was into his stride and into his rhythm. Whereas someone like Glenn McGrath, he could be out of cricket for 4 months, 5 months, not pick up a ball in anger, and then go and bowl brilliantly and take 5 wickets on the first morning of a test match.
I think it's about keeping your body in tune, David, as well. Because, as you know, if you go through a period without your flexibility exercises or your normal conditioning exercises, your body can sort of get out of place. And as you know, if you remember the first net session after a long off season, your body is really sore. Your body can't really handle it for the first few weeks. So it's going to be like that if I sort of do nothing and come back into the season and play straight away.
Mm. I think really it's about having a plan, isn't it? You know, it's whatever you choose to do, as long as it's part of your plan in some way, then you're not sabotaging yourself. If you just do whatever and don't think about it, then you're just sabotaging yourself, really. But if you've got some kind of a plan, even if it, you know, I mean, my plan on Christmas Day, for example, is to do as little as possible, eat as much food as possible, and probably have a few too many drinks. But, you know, that's Christmas Day. I'm quite happy to do that on Christmas Day, and then, you know, get back to it on Boxing Day. So, you know, it's a personal choice, but I think the key is to have a plan. So anyway, on behalf of everybody who listens to the show, I'm going to wish you a very nice holiday. And in the meantime, I'm going to try and get hold of some guest presenters, so to fill your empty chair. So listen out, don't worry, it won't just be me talking. I'll find somebody else to co-host the show while Kevin's away, and keep his seat warm.
Sounds good, David. Thanks for that. Let's get into our interviews and chats for today, David. We're back again to talk to Gary Palmer, our resident batting coach. Now, Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a listen to the advice Gary Palmer has for us today.
Hello, Gary. Welcome back.
Hi, Dave. Good to be back.
This week's question is from Simon. He says he's a right-handed batsman and he's having trouble with his head falling across to the offside, resulting in getting out LBW a lot because his pad follows his head across the stumps.
Yep.
Do you have any drills to improve this balance issue?
Yeah, this is something which is a hugely common fault with right-handed batters, because generally the bowlers are bowling on, around or outside off stump. And everyone would like to sort of, you know, if you went out to bat and you were thinking of getting off the mark, the one area that players are always in their mind wanting to play the ball is on the offside. And they tend to be looking for that. The reason he could be tipping over could be partially that. But something we've talked about before is maybe this particular player is, again, picking his bat up or her bat up over middle and leg. Maybe they're standing too sideways, which I would say with that front shoulder underneath their chin, rather and underneath their sort of left ear if they're a right-handed batter. Because if you're too sideways in your setup, it's hard to pull it all back and get it right when the ball is straight or on the leg side. And a practice that I do quite a lot is the bowling machine or even the hand feed throw down, like a left arm over the wicket bowler, throwing it in at middle and leg, because you start getting your balance nice and neutral, because you're perceiving hitting the ball straight and through mid on, which helps keep your head straight, keeps your body well aligned, it's good for balance. And then, you know, when the ball goes on the offside, all you have to do is turn your shoulder and play your conventional off drive. So I would say a lot of round, you know, left arm over the wicket feeds. If you're on the machine, get it swinging in slightly, swinging into a middle and leg, and just start in that set position for an on drive, which is on the Pitch Vision online coaching batting section. Perfect that. Then do it from your stance. And then I would put the machine over the wicket and swing the ball into that particular player again, because the ball is swinging in, the player again knows they have to keep their head neutral, let the ball swing, and again their target area is straight or mid on. And then I would finish the session with the bowling machine over the wicket, swinging it away, which is conventional, which now will bring that player into starting to play through straight and mid off. And you probably miss it a few early on because you've been tuned into that on drive, but once you've got the hang of it and you start turning your shoulder and you've already got in your mind that you're nice and neutrally balanced, nice and straight and well aligned, then you finish your session off having played off drive, ball swinging away, you've done loads of ball swinging in, and it's like getting a pack of cards, one in each hand, and just shuffling them into each other like you see them doing. So you've got a bit from one side, a bit from the other side, and the brain is sort of thinking you're getting that middle ground, so you're always centrally balanced. And again, you know, when it's in at your legs, you don't want to be getting your shoulder at the ball, which is a common fault. That blocks you off, gets you tipping over. Backswing goes over leg stump. If you open that shoulder and get the head at the ball and put your foot down the line of middle and leg, you're in a great position, well balanced and well aligned. Play your on drive and your straight drive. And the more you do it, the more you get used to it, the better your balance and alignment gets. Then you'll stop tipping to the offside.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Now we have a new interview this week where we have a chat with Alan Crouch, the head of performance at Wiltshire Cricket. Now, Wiltshire Cricket have really had a success story in the past few years where they've produced really good young players to go on to play in the first-class teams. So let's have a listen into the chat David and Alan had recently.
Why do you think Wiltshire produces so many good young players compared to other counties?
It could be one of two reasons. It could be just luck in that we just happen to have a good crop of youngsters coming through. Hmm. I would like to think, though, that it's more to do with the structure that we had in Wiltshire, which has taken time to develop, but I think we have a fairly sound structure that allows talent to develop.
And how does that work? How does that structure work if you're a young player? How do you fit into that?
There are a lot of clubs with youth sections, as there are everywhere. Mm. But alongside that, what we do is, through the vast number of schools that now play quick cricket and the various quick cricket festivals around the county and around every district, we make efforts to scout and talent spot at those festivals all players of any ability under 10 or 11, mm-hmm. so that we can feed them into our district program. So that's the first rung of the ladder, if you like.
Yeah.
And then from there, we have a district and county structure in place running right through the age groups that allow that talent to be monitored.
And so if you were going to give a couple of tips, say three tips, say a young player came to you and said, you know, I want to stand out, I want to make my way through the system as quickly as possible, What three pieces of advice would you give to that person?
Firstly, get involved with a club with a strong youth section where you've got proactive coaches, where you feel that the environment allows you to develop. Secondly, to play as good a cricket as you possibly can, because there tends to be cricket available for everybody, and the most talented tend to get dragged into a lot of easy cricket.
Right.
But it's important that they do play cricket to allow them to succeed, of course, but also it's important for them to play the best available cricket to them in order to stretch them. Finally, I think that they need some form of mentor. That could be a coach, it could be a player, it could be a relation that they can talk to freely about their game and about everything, you know, that goes with it, that their lifestyle habits and what have you, in case there are any blocks and barriers in the way that may prevent them from developing at the rate they should.
How quickly can you tell if a player has what it takes to be a success?
You'll get many answers from many different people about this. To be perfectly honest, it's not something that you can tell straight away. It's something that, until they're exposed at the highest level, you don't really know. There will be people that will say otherwise, but I believe that until you throw them in the deep end, you don't really know. But it's about that. You know, you get late developers, you get early developers, and quite often the late developers are those that actually come through it. So you've got to be patient and allow opportunities, you know, windows later on when they're sort of 15, 16, 17, maybe 18, for them to actually come into a system they may not previously have been in. For that very reason, they may well be a late developer and you may just miss a player if you don't allow access for those late developers.
Are there any clues or sort of indicators or things that you see in someone you think, now that marks him out a little bit more than other people?
For sure, yeah. First and foremost, you do look at physical ability. You do look at the various physical components to see if they actually have the physical attributes necessary to play the game. That's for sure. But over and above that, what's probably equally important, if not more important, the mental attributes that a player has, you know, are they able to cope with the pressures at a higher level? And that can be exposed actually through training, through pressurized practices that allow you to assess how that player is in the various areas of mental toughness.
Let's switch the focus to coaching now. If there was a secret to being an effective coach, what would you say it was?
There are no secrets. Firstly, I think an effective coach needs to be knowledgeable. Without knowledge, they're going to be very limited. And that takes time to gain and acquire that knowledge. So I would recommend that any coach takes every opportunity to learn from as wide an audience as possible. And not just to listen to one method, but a variety of methods so that they increase their library of information. That way, at some stage in their career as a coach, they may well be able to tap in somewhere down the line on that library of information that could develop a player. So there's no quick fix. You've just got to get out there and coach, and probably, if you can, try to work in an environment where there are more experienced and knowledgeable coaches, because that's the only way to really pick things up. You can't do it by yourself, that's for sure.
Thanks, Alan, for your time. Welcome to the question section for this week. David, our first question is from Zishan, and he says, what about doing interval training on a cross trainer? Are there any advantages or disadvantages? Does the rest periods and work intensity still stay the same? And what about doing interval training with strong lifts, 5x5 workout in the off season? Now, David, I had a look at the strong lifts workouts. It does seem really useful, but I'm not game enough to try it yet. What do you think about Zishan's question, David, about interval training and cross training?
Yeah, there's kind of two parts to this question, isn't there? The first part is can he do interval training on a cross trainer? And yeah. I presume he means, you know, like a machine, a cross training machine that you'd find in the gym. So
yeah,
this was a question about a article that I did on interval training. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes, so you've got a better idea what we're talking about there. And in it, I sort of explain the different work to rest ratios that are best suited for cricketers. You know, that best reflect what's happening on the cricket pitch, basically. Because mm-hmm. interval training, for those who aren't aware, interval training is where you have an amount of work at a certain intensity, and then you rest for a certain amount of time, and then you do more work, and sort of it's on off on off. That's why it's called intervals, because it's on off on off.
Yeah.
So there's a full explanation of that on the article, so I won't go into too much detail there. But he's asking, can I do the same thing on a cross trainer?
Yeah.
Theoretically, you can, because the idea of interval training is to improve your aerobic capacity, your endurance, if you like, or work capacity is another way of calling it, your heart and lung strength. And so in theory, anything will do, you know, a treadmill, a bike, a cross trainer, running, anything.
Yeah.
But in practice, it doesn't quite work like that. And that's because of this this idea of specificity, where your body adapts to the demand that you put upon it. So you would think, say, for example, Lance Armstrong. He is one of the finest endurance bike riders to have ever lived. And he ran a marathon recently. I might have told this story before. He ran a marathon recently, and he's got one of the most efficient cardiovascular systems ever recorded. He's got a very low resting heart rate. His VO2 max, which is his lung capacity, is one of the highest ever recorded. And they did some calculations. The sports science people did some calculations that said he should be with the VO2 max that he had, with the lung capacity that he had, he should be able to run a marathon in about 2 hours and 5 minutes, which, if you know your marathon, which is pretty much the world record, which would make sense because, you know, he's a world record holder in endurance bicycle racing, Tour de France, all that sort of thing. So he ran the London Marathon. No, I think it was the New York Marathon. But anyway, he ran a marathon, and he finished something like 300th place. And he did it in a decent amount of time. I think it was under 3 hours. I can't remember exactly. But it was a long way off what was calculated. And he was nowhere near A, getting the world record, or B, winning the race. And the reason is he was completely adapted to riding a bike, not running. And he said afterwards, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. And this is the guy who regularly won the Tour de France. So it's very, the body is very, very, very specific. So although you will get fitter if you use a cross trainer, you'll get better at using, the only thing really you'll get better at is using a cross trainer. You won't really get better at running, which is kind of the whole point. If you're doing it for cricket, the whole point is to do it to be better at running between the wickets, chasing after a ball if you're in the field, or running in again and again if you're bowling. So there's not really, yes, you will improve your heart and lung capacity, and so therefore you will get fitter, but you'll get a lot more specifically fitter more quickly if you do it with running. So if you've got no choice, use a cross trainer, because a cross trainer is better than nothing. But if you have a choice, then get out and do some running. And it's so specific, in fact, that you can even see a difference between running in your cricket shoes on grass and running on concrete. or an artificial surface. So because every slight change is one slight thing away from what is the actuality of it, the reality of it. So you might not need to go so far as to, you know, put your cricket shoes on and go running in the park. But if you can, you should get as close to real life as you can, because that's going to give you the biggest crossover to the pitch. Yeah. But the rest periods in the work intensities, they do stay the same, because again, you want to be as close as possible to what happens on the cricket pitch. So you want the rest periods and the work intensities to stay the same. And you can see a table of those on the article, which will be linked to in the show notes. Now, the second part of the question was, can I do interval training with the strong lifts 5x5 workout? Just a bit of background on the strong lift 5x5. As you know, Kevin, it's a workout which is a weightlifting style workout designed by a chap called Mehdi, who I think that's how you pronounce it, who gives it away free on his website. And I'll post a link to that workout so you can see that. And it's based on the idea of the big barbell exercises, the squat particularly, but also the bench press. You do 5 sets of 5 reps, and that's the best. That gives you the best bang for your buck, if you like. It gives you the most strength improvements in the quickest amount of time. So, and it's based on sort of hard scientific knowledge, you know, that it does work very, very well. I mean, it's hard to say whether any particular method is the best, probably not, but 5x5 is a good place to start, especially for beginners. So, and it's 3 workouts a week, and you do quite a lot of squatting and a reasonable amount of upper body exercises and other things as well, and use a barbell and weights. So you probably have to have a home gym with an Olympic barbell and some weights, or go to your local gym who've got a power rack and all that sort of thing, or a squat rack. So that's the background to that. It's very hard, especially on the legs, because you do a lot of squatting, you do deadlifts, you're adding weight to the bar every single workout. So it can get very hard very quickly. So for most people, especially for beginners, I would say probably don't do any interval training if you're starting out with the strong lifts 5x5 workout, purely because your legs will be like jelly on your rest days. Yes. I've done this workout and your legs are like jelly on your rest days, and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, I've got to squat again tomorrow, and I've got to add extra weight to the bar. Last time I squatted whatever 80 kilos. This time I've got to squat 82.5 kilos. So, and you think to yourself, God, I only just managed 80. How am I going to manage? So psychologically, it's very tough. But if you can do it, if you're experienced, if you're a more experienced lifter, an intermediate type lifter, and maybe you've done the strong lift 5x5 for a while, or you've done other weightlifting for a while, then yeah, you probably can get away with it if you're fit enough. But you have to sort of play it by ear, if you like. I'd be very cautious about doing everything, especially if you're starting everything. You probably get away with it for a little while, but fatigue will set in fairly quickly. So you want to build up to it rather than going all out for the interval training and then all out for the 5x5 all at the same time. Maybe start with the 5x5, get into the habit of doing that, and then start very gently with some interval training, maybe once a week. And then maybe jump it up to twice a week if you think you can do that. You probably, if you're uber fit, then you can maybe get away with 3 times a week. But twice would be the most max for most people. And for beginners especially, don't do anything to start with. So just build it up.
Yeah. David, our next question is from Gabe, and he says, I play Sydney grade cricket and I'm 14. I play for the 5th grade team and I'm a right-hand batsman. I come in at 7 and I've been getting out to stupid shots such as lofting the ball and mishitting it to cover. I often get in at the last 15 to 20 overs and I'm meant to get runs quickly with the other batsmen. And usually I try to hit out, but that doesn't work. I feel that my only option is to drop and run, but I'm failing to hit or drop the ball into the gaps. Do you have any drills I can do to help to place the ball between the fielders, as I'm a quick runner as well? Now, David, I think you've mentioned one of these drills before about placing cones in the nets and hitting it between the cones. Could that be useful for Gabe? And considering, though, that he's a 14-year-old playing fifth-grade cricket, which is pretty good, David, he should still be playing junior cricket, but he's up there with the big boys. What would you suggest for him?
All right, so I'm not that great. I don't know that much about great cricket. So you have to tell me, how good is that fifth grade? I mean, would you see many 14-year-olds playing fifth grade?
No, you wouldn't, David. It's a pretty high level for a 14-year-old.
Okay, and it's quite serious. It's played quite seriously. It's not sort of it's not sort of messing around type cricket. It's actual, it's taken very seriously.
Yeah, exactly. It's five grades from being considered from New South Wales.
Okay. All right. So yeah, he's thrown us a bit of a bit of a googly here, if you like. He said he has trouble. He usually comes in at the end. He has a bit of trouble getting on with it. The only thing I feel I can do is to tip and run. Can you help me with tip and run? But I think his logic is a bit flawed there. I think he's gone from A to from point A to point D, but he's sort of gone around all the houses and he hasn't noticed point B or point C in the meantime. And the reason I'm saying that is because I think the problem is he doesn't feel comfortable either hitting out or playing in an orthodox way or playing tip and run. He doesn't feel comfortable in any of those three options. So my question is, if he's not feeling comfortable, then why is that happening? Is it because he's not practicing well enough? Because all those three options, really, they're built from the one option, from the first option of playing with a proper technique. Because if you've got a decent basic technique, then you can learn how to hit out much more easily. You can learn how to play tip and run a lot more easily. But if you haven't got your basic technique sorted out, then it's no good doing drills to learn how to push the ball into the gaps. And it's no good learning how to play the slog sweep, because you're building it on foundations made of sand. You can't do it. So I think we should go back all the way back to point A, start again, and say, how's your technique looking? Because at age 14, I don't think he should be worrying about those things. I think he should be worrying about batting through the innings, because 20 overs is quite a long time. Yeah. You can score quite a lot of runs in 20 overs without slogging, especially in fifth grade cricket, which I presume isn't going to be, although it's serious, I presume it isn't going to be the highest standard of cricket that's ever been played. So the bowlers are not going to bowl maiden after maiden at you, good length ball after good length ball at you. So especially if you're coming in towards the end, the bowlers are probably a bit tired. You know, if it's hot weather, you know, they're probably thinking about getting off the park. You know, you come in the last few overs and you think, right, I can, you know, they're going to bowl me a few half volleys and long hops here. So all I need to do is wait for the bad ball. So how's the technique? If he bowls you a half volley on the leg stump, can you hit it through the V for four? Can you do that? If he bowls you a half volley on middle stump, can you hit it straight back past the bowler for four? If he bowls you a ball which is a little bit short and you can get onto the back foot, can you punch it through the covers? Can you punch it through mid on for four? If you can't do those things, you haven't got a good enough basic technique to be thinking about trying to play tip and run. And it, certainly at lower level club cricket in England, if you're playing, I mean, it's hard to compare because I've never seen the standards. I can't compare the standards exactly. But if you say, let's talk about second or third 11 club cricket in the UK, all you need to do is be able to play an on drive, be able to play a straight drive, and be able to play an off drive off the front and the back foot, and you will score an absolute ton of runs, even coming in at seven. You don't need to slog. You don't need to play tip and run. You just need to smack it back past the bowler and go, fetch that, mate. Yeah. Now, it doesn't. I'm not saying that those should be your only shots. Of course, you know, cutting and pulling, being able to flick the ball off your legs. But flicking the ball off your legs is really just a development of the on drive anyway. So if you can play an on drive, you can play a flick. It's just a matter of tipping your wrists, and it's a ball which is a little bit wider. It's down the leg side. So that's what I would work on. I wouldn't worry about doing drills to play tip and run. I would work on having an absolutely dead on drive, because you've got a dead on drive. You probably have a dead on straight drive. You probably have a dead on flick off the legs, and front and back foot. And if you can play those shots, you're looking at an arc there, really, from all the way from fine leg all the way through to cover with the cover drive, front and back foot. And that's a pretty big arc. And that's not including the pull shot, which most people can play instinctively anyway, and the cut shot, which, again, most people can play instinctively, although in my case, I can never seem to make contact with it. I probably hit about... I think I managed to score about 2 runs last season with the cut shot, and even though I probably tried to play it about 20 times. but I'm not a very good example. So just get the basics in place. It is amazing. You know, people watch the television and they think, well, you know, I've got to be able to play all these different shots and reverse sweeps and do all these things. If you're playing lower grade cricket, and okay, it's a good standard for your age, but if you're playing lower grade cricket, you don't have to worry about these things. You haven't got world class bowlers bowling at you. Just wait for the half volley and smash it.
So it's really about setting his foundations, isn't it, David?
Yes.
Do you think he's actually overcomplicating things?
Probably. He's getting all in a muddle. He doesn't know what to do. He's thinking to himself, you know, I should be slogging because I'm coming in at the end. Well, you don't need to be slogging. You know, if you hit 3 fours and over all along the ground through mid on, that'll do nicely. Thank you very much. Don't try and play lofted drives. Don't try and play, what's the other shot he said? He's hitting the ball in the air to cover. Okay. Well, what that says to me is there's something wrong with his technique. Or his shot selection is terrible. But then, you know, if he's playing fifth grade cricket at 14, he probably hasn't got terrible shot selection. He's probably picking the difference between a half volley and a good length ball. So my guess would be that, you know, he just hasn't got the sound basic technique, and he shouldn't worry about anything else until he's got the sound basic technique. And the very quick test of that is, can you drive the ball through mid on off the front and the back foot? Because if you can do that, that's probably the one shot which all other shots can be built from.
Yeah, I think with the rise of 2020 cricket, David, a lot of youngsters, they see aggressive cricket as hitting in the air or hitting sixes.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not saying never hit the ball in the air either. I mean, it's just that if you know how to hit the ball along the ground, then that's the foundation. And then from there, then you can just make contact with the ball that slight amount earlier with exactly the same technique. You don't lose your shape, you don't lose your head position, you don't lose your alignment. Everything stays the same, but you just hit the ball slightly more out in front of your pad, and then it goes for 6 instead of 4. But if you haven't got the basic technique in the first place and you're trying to hit sixes, then you're just fooling yourself. You're not going to get away with it for very long. You might, if you've got a good eye, then you might get away with it for a little while. But if you want to build a good foundation that's going to last you for a career, you know, maybe even move on into professional cricket, you've got to get that shape right. You've got to have your head in the right position. You've got to be well balanced. You've got to finish your shots with the toe of the bat pointing in the direction that you want the ball to travel in.
Don't forget that you can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. Stay tuned for our next show on the 18th of December. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So this is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.